Lowe's knows you've got a job to do, and we help get it done. With the MyLowe's Pro Rewards program, eligible members save more. With volume discounts on qualifying orders through a quote of $2,000 or more. Join for free today. Lowe's, we help you save. Offer can't be combined with any other discount, contract, and or special pricing. Exclusions, more terms, and restrictions apply. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
Police officers, what was your OSH asterisk T moment? Story one. I was asked to check on a man who wasn't doing well and might hurt himself. He lived alone. His car was in the driveway, and the house was locked. I was told where the spare key was, so I used it to go inside. I called out to let him know I was there and started looking through the house. Honestly, I expected to find the worst. When I opened a closet door, he was inside, sitting quietly, and had a weapon next to him. If he had wanted to, things could have gone very badly for me. But instead, I sat down and talked with him for about 30 minutes. He told me he heard me calling, but didn't want to answer at first. In the end, I was able to get him the help he needed. Edit, I didn't expect so many people to respond. Thank you for the kind words and encouragement. I'll try to answer questions when I can. Story 2. I came across a teenager who had fallen asleep in a car at the end of a country road. When I ran the license plate, I found out he had been reported missing from home. The car doors were locked, so I tapped on the window to wake him up. As soon as he realized what was happening, he suddenly pulled out a weapon that he had hidden under a blanket and seriously hurt himself right there in front of me. It was a heartbreaking and heavy way to begin my shift. Story 3. We were looking for a man who had taken some weapons from his ex. We found him hiding under a pile of clothes in a closet at another house. The problem was there were about 7 kids sleeping in the same room. I started guiding the kids out while my partner put cuffs on the guy, who was pretending to be asleep. We decided to pull him out, and when I went and moved the mattress to make space, we discovered the missing weapons right under where the kids had been sleeping. Story 4. My husband has been a police officer for more than 20 years. One night, while patrolling downtown, he noticed a purse that someone had left behind. He opened it to check for ID, but instead he found something shocking. Someone had actually used the purse as a bathroom and then left it there. He's seen some pretty rough things in his job, but that's the one story he always says he wishes he could forget. Edit, thank you all for the kind reactions. I'm glad my husband's story gave so many people a good laugh. Story 5. A law professor in Australia used to be a police officer for about 20 years before becoming a lawyer and later a teacher. While explaining the defense known as battered spouse syndrome, he shared a story that changed the way he understood it. He got a call from an elderly woman who said she had hurt her husband. When he arrived at her home, she welcomed him in with a smile and asked if he'd like some tea. She calmly set out a tray with tea and cakes, which made him wonder if she really knew what was going on. He gently asked, "You mentioned on the phone that something happened to your husband. Could I see him?" She directed him to the living room, where her husband was slumped in a chair, a drink still in his hand, no longer alive. Meanwhile, she was still asking whether he took sugar or milk in his tea. The professor explained that in that moment, he finally understood why this defense existed. The woman had lived under her husband's control for years. He drank heavily, hurt her often, controlled the money, and wouldn't let her have friends. She had no safe way out, no real escape. On that particular day, after he threatened her again, she reacted in the only way she felt she could. The professor said this was a moment he realized that sometimes life pushes people into impossible corners, and their choices don't always make sense from the outside. Story 6. This happened around August of last year. Close to 2 a.m., we got a 911 hang-up call where the only thing heard on the line was yelling. I was the closest unit, and since I was working solo that night, I headed over. As I got near the house, I could already hear multiple voices shouting from inside. When I rushed up to the door, the first thing I noticed was shocking. There was blood everywhere. The floor, the walls, even the doorframe, all smeared up to shoulder height. A frantic woman pointed me toward the living room. Inside, I found a man and a woman sitting on the couch, both completely covered in blood. The man had a huge cut on his arm, and the woman had tied a belt around it, trying to stop the bleeding, but it wasn't working. I grabbed my tourniquet, told him, "This is going to hurt, but will save your life," and applied it just above his bicep. He immediately said his hand was going numb, which meant it was working. That's when I noticed he also had another deep cut on the back of his arm. It took about 15 minutes for paramedics to arrive, and they told me straight up, if I hadn't used the tourniquet, he wouldn't have made it. In the end, We found out what happened. The man had been drinking, forgot his keys, tried to climb into the house through a second-story window, and smashed his way inside. That mistake almost cost him his life. Story 7. A young girl was dropped off at the hospital. My colleague and I were there with someone we were escorting from custody. The girl started making small talk with our prisoner in the waiting room. They didn't know each other. It was just casual chit-chat. Then she walked off, and we assumed she went somewhere else. A little while later, our prisoner said, "That girl has been in the bathroom for a long time." At first, we laughed it off, but then realized it had really been quite a while. I knocked on the door. No answer. It was locked. I had unscrewed a lock, and when I opened it, I saw her sitting there, barely breathing and unresponsive. My partner rushed to get help, and a nurse came running. She unzipped the girl's jacket, and we realized she had tried to harm herself using a sock. Her face was already turning blue. I managed to cut it off, and thankfully she started breathing again. She was quickly taken inside for treatment, with my partner going along. I stayed back with our prisoner, trying to catch my breath. That's when another nurse came rushing out to me, saying the girl had become aggressive, hitting her head on the wall, kicking, striking out, and trying to bite. I couldn't just leave my partner, so I ran in to help. It took three of us to calm her down safely. Meanwhile, the prisoner we'd been escorting just sat quietly in the waiting room, uncuffed, and never once tried to run. Only when I was driving home later that night did the wave of it hit me. A young girl had nearly lost her life just a few feet away from me. And the only reason we even noticed was because the prisoner she spoke to had been paying attention. Story 8. Back when I was a rookie, I got sent to check out an alarm at a restaurant that had a reputation for being haunted by a woman. The first officer on scene was a veteran, an older guy who never really showed emotion on the radio. But as soon as he got there, his voice went up an octave, and he immediately called for a second unit. That alone had me thinking something serious was happening. When I pulled up, I saw him with his shotgun out, leaning over the hood of his car. My first thought was, oh no, someone must be breaking in. I ran up to him and asked what was going on. All he said was that when his headlights hit the building, he saw a woman jump off the roof and then vanish. He was clearly shaken, and that was enough to put me on edge. Another officer and I searched the building top to bottom, but we found no trace that anyone had been there. That moment left a big impression on me. From then on, I made sure never to go back to that restaurant at night without another officer by my side. Story 9. When I was a rookie cop in a small town, I got sent to check on a report of a bunch of kids causing a disturbance in the school parking lot late at night. On the way there, I realized I had never tested my PA speaker, which I planned to use to tell the crowd to leave. So, at around 2 a.m., I'm rolling slowly down a quiet residential street with my windows down. I decide to tap the PA mic a couple times. First two taps, I can't tell if it's working. I slow down, try a few more taps, and this time I definitely hear the loudspeaker echoing to the neighborhood. Right at that moment, I hear someone yell, "What are you doing?" I look over, and there's this older guy sitting on his porch in nothing but his underwear, glaring at me. Our eyes locked, and I instantly knew I had no good excuse for blasting my loudspeaker in the middle of the night. I just froze, said nothing, and then floored up the road. It wasn't as serious oh no moment, but the awkwardness level was through the roof. Definitely one of those rookie lessons I'll never forget. Story 10. I've been in law enforcement long enough to know that the job can throw just about anything at you, things that are terrifying, heartbreaking, and sometimes downright ridiculous. Let me take you through a night of memories that, when strung together, pretty much sum up the emotional roller coaster of being a cop. It starts in the autopsy room. If you've never been inside one, the sights, sounds, and smells leave a mark you'll never forget. I watched as the medical examiner worked. Samples taken from the eyes, the bone saw cutting into the skull, and the unsettling suction sound when the top of the skull was lifted off. Those moments stick with you, not because of the gore, but because they remind you how fragile we all are. From there, picture me heading out on a welfare check. A woman in her 50s hadn't been seen for a few days. No answer at the door, so I peered through a few windows. The last one had blinds half open, and that's when I saw her, lying in bed, eyes open, gone. I'd seen many bodies before, but that one gave me chills I can't shake to this day. If that wasn't eerie enough, another call took me to a man who had passed away peacefully in his sleep. I spent a couple of hours in his bedroom while we waited for the proper team to arrive. Then, out of nowhere, a belt slid off a treadmill and smacked against a moving belt. Loud, sharp, and with no reason it should have fallen. in a room where death lingered. That sound was enough to make the hair on my neck stand straight up. But not every memory is dark. Some are just embarrassingly funny. Like the time I was helping a female officer pat down a man, we pulled from a car at a green light. He was already cuffed when I crouched down near his ankle and heard a sound no cop wants to hear. Let's just say he completely lost control. I kept my mouth shut and loaded him into the car. Then the female officer leaned in to buckle his seatbelt, gagged, and said, "What is that smell?" I just looked at her and said, "Yeah, that was him." Sometimes you laugh, or else you cry. And then there are the adrenaline-charged moments, the ones where your heart pounds and the whole department seems to move as one. I was in a community policing unit, about 25 of us walking out of a meeting when dispatch called out a serious crime just blocks away. The suspect? Driving a red truck. Another officer spotted it, and I was first on scene as he pulled the driver out at gunpoint. We cuffed him, and when I turned around, I swear it looked like the entire department had shown up. Over 50 patrol cars, all stacked in the street. Later, I saw the traffic cam footage and lost count of how many units rolled in. It was less of an oh no moment and more of a holy crap one. That's the thing about this job. You never know what's coming next. One moment you're staring into the fragility of life. The next you're shaking your head at the absurd. And the next you're part of something that feels larger than yourself. Cops get scars you don't always see. But we also collect stories. Stories that stick with us forever. Story 11. My older brother is a police officer. One night, he got a call about a teenager behind a school who was in serious distress and holding a knife. When my brother arrived, the teen spotted him and immediately began hurting himself. Without hesitation, my brother sprinted toward him and used his taser to stop him before it was too late. In doing that, he saved the kid's life. The whole thing was caught on his body camera, and it was one of the most intense situations he's ever faced. Edit. A few people have asked about the video. As far as I know, it's not public. And honestly, since this involved a struggling teenager, it's probably best it stays that way for his own privacy and healing. Story 12. Not me, but a drill sergeant I had in basic training once shared her very first call as a military police officer. It was a family incident that turned out to be one of the most disturbing and tragic cases she had ever responded to. She told us the story not to shock us, but as a warning. Even though we were training to be MPs, the things we'd see would sometimes be far beyond what we could imagine. Her point was clear. Always be ready, because you never know what the next call will bring. That lesson stuck with me. Hearing her story made me realize the job wasn't just about rules and regulations. It was about being prepared for chaos, tragedy, and the kinds of moments that can leave a mark on you forever. Story 13. I was a police intern, maybe 2 months in. My job was mostly to ride along, help with traffic stops, and learn from the officers. It was a small town, and usually the calls were nothing major, just the occasional drunk or domestic dispute. One afternoon, I was with a newer officer who had recently transferred in from working at the prison. We were running speed checks on the edge of town when we spotted a guy on a motorcycle flying past us. No helmet, which was illegal at the time. We pulled him over, no problem. The guy didn't even look back at us, barely mumbled his answers through clenched teeth. We went back to the cruiser, ran his license, and that's when things got real. Turns out he had several out-of-state warrants, and there was a be-on-the-lookout attached. He'd been involved in an armed assault against a police officer. I looked at the officer. He looked at me, and without hesitation, he reached down, unlocked the shotgun from the console, and handed it to me. All he said was, "If you know how to use this, be ready." That was the oh no moment for me. My heart was pounding, and all I could think about was how fast things could go bad. But then, like something out of a movie, officers from surrounding towns started showing up one by one until we had a whole lineup behind us. Luckily, the guy was tired of running. He surrendered quietly, no fight, no chase. Looking back, it could have gone in a very different direction. But as an intern, that was the moment I realized just how fast a routine traffic stop can flip your whole world upside down. Story 14. There was a call about a child who had drowned at a local pool, and I had to respond along with the ambulances for the investigation. I got there first and saw the boy's father holding him, crying. My heart sank. I rushed over and started CPR, doing everything I could to keep him alive. For about 10 minutes, I worked nonstop until the ambulance finally pulled onto the street. Just as it arrived, the boy started breathing again. I later went to visit him in a hospital, and he told me that one day he wants to be a police officer. That moment reminded me why we do what we do, and it's one I'll never forget. Story 15. I was on a traffic stop, and my sergeant came to back me up since there was a chance we'd have to tow the vehicle. His SUV was parked right behind mine, both of us in the right lane. My sergeant stayed in his car, and I got out of mine to go talk to him. As I walked closer, I suddenly heard an engine revving hard, but I couldn't see where it was coming from. For just a split second, I knew it was about to happen, and all I could think was, oh no! Before I could react, a vehicle slammed into the back of my sergeant's SUV. The impact launched the SUV forward into me, and I was thrown into the road. The driver turned out to be completely drunk and didn't even have a license. This happened just last Sunday. I've got knee surgery scheduled in a couple weeks, and my sergeant ended up with a broken back. Story 16. I'm not a cop, but this is a story of how I unintentionally gave one a big, oh no moment. Years ago, I worked nights managing a liquor store in a really rough neighborhood. The place was just a single room with me behind a counter at the entrance. I'd only been there about a month when a buddy dropped by to hang out. At one point, he asked if the owners had given me anything for protection, considering how bad the area was. I told him, just this old double-barrel shotgun under the counter, but it's not even loaded. I reached down and picked it up to show him. Right then, I could hear police sirens nearby, but sirens were so common in that neighborhood, I didn't pay them much attention. What I didn't know was that two armed robberies had just gone down a couple blocks away, and cops were rushing to the scene. Seconds later, a patrol car swerved into our parking lot, and an officer sprinted inside to make sure my store wasn't being hit too. The problem was, he came through the door just as I turned around holding the shotgun. Without realizing it, I had it pointed right at him. For a split second, he froze. His face went pale because he had no idea if I was the suspect they were after. My heart dropped too when I realized how bad it looked. I immediately set the gun down and told him there was no harm meant. Thankfully, he understood. But I'll tell you this, we both had an oh no moment we'll never forget. Story 17. I had just started my shift when I heard a radio call about a car accident just outside the city. I checked in and headed that way to help however I could. On the drive, I was told it was actually closer to the next city over, but that I'd still be the first one there. Then dispatch confirmed. It was a head-on collision. When I arrived, I saw the wreck. Five people from one vehicle hadn't been wearing seatbelts. All five were critically injured, and there was nothing anyone could do. A doctor showed up soon after me, but even he could only confirm the same. I watched two adults and three children slip away right in front of me. The six-year-old little girl just stared at me, unblinking, as she passed. That moment still breaks me inside. What made it even harder was that I actually knew them. They were students at our elementary school. I used to visit that school all the time, handing out junior police stickers, letting the kids take pictures of my patrol car, showing them the gadgets. Seeing them like that, knowing who they were, made it unbearable. I went to memorial service later, just to quietly pay my respects. Their father was there, devastated and angry. He didn't know I was the first officer on scene. I overheard him say he wished he knew which cop had been there, because he wanted someone to blame for not saving them. Hearing that was painful, because I would have given anything to save those children. I'm not a superhero. I don't have magic powers. I was just a man standing there, powerless, wishing with everything in me that I could have changed the outcome. I'll carry that day with me forever, but it also changed how I live. I've since had my own child, and every single day I treasure the time I get with him. The tragedy taught me never to take a single moment for granted. Story 18. I used to work with a guy who had been with Long Beach PD, and he told me one of the wildest stories I've ever heard. The call started out pretty normal. An older man had gotten into a fight with his neighbor over a fence and supposedly made some threats. By the time my buddy got on scene, two other units were already there. The man was cuffed and sitting in the back of a patrol car. Looked like things were handled. My friend walked up to one of the officers just to check in, but he immediately noticed the cop had this wide-eyed, you won't believe this look on his face. The officer just said, come with me, you have to see this. They walked through the house and into the garage, and my buddy swears it was like stepping into that scene in Boondock Saints where they're picking out weapons. This guy had been stockpiling for years. Rifles, shotguns, pistols, homemade explosives, you name it. But the wildest thing of all, what they called the throne. It was literally a gas-powered riding lawnmower with two M60 machine guns mounted on it, complete with controls and ammo cans. According to my buddy, it was the single craziest garage he'd ever set foot in. Story 19. About 9 years ago, we got a strange call. Someone from a payphone said there was a body inside an abandoned building at the corner of First and Main. No details, no name. Then the caller hung up. An officer went to check, but couldn't find anything that looked abandoned. The payphone use was miles away, so the call was cleared. The very next day, another call came in. Same message. There's a body inside the abandoned building at First and Main. Again, the caller hung up. This time, I was dispatched. Now, you gotta understand, this was during a time when the local economy was booming. Abandoned buildings were rare. I drove around the area, shopping plazas, warehouses, even some new construction, but found nothing. Eventually, as I pulled onto a major roadway, I stopped at a light and happened to glance forward. That's when I saw it. A massive electrical factory, surrounded by a 9-foot wall. At first glance, it looked fine. The landscaping was maintained. But in reality, it had been sitting empty for at least 15 years. That had to be it. I called for backup, and when another unit arrived, we climbed in through a drainage pipe and started checking doors. The place was gigantic, over 100,000 square feet. Pipes, ducts, loading bays, even a basement. Most of the doors were locked until I tugged on one, and it swung open. We announced ourselves and stepped into the building, and instantly, the door closed behind us. The darkness swallowed everything. Pitch black. Couldn't see a hand in front of my face. As we cleared rooms, it only got stranger. In one chamber, maybe an old clean room, there was no sound at all. No echo, no outside noise, just silence. It was unsettling, like the air itself had been swallowed. The floor had holes leading to a flooded basement. Wires dangled from the ceiling. Debris crunched underfoot. It looked like the set of a horror movie, and the whole time, we were searching for a dead body. Finally, we reached the industrial section. Massive boilers, ducts, and machinery. And spiders. Too many spiders. We pushed into a dead-end room filled with towering electrical cabinets, each about 8 feet tall, and lined up side by side. They looked like something straight out of a mad scientist's lab, covered in dials, switches, and glowing buttons. Only one panel still had power. A single red light glowing in the middle of the darkness. I told my partner, "Looks like this was a waste of time. Let me just check behind these cabinets and we'll head out." I stepped to the side, peeked around the edge, and there he was, a man's body wedged between the cabinet and the wall. I'd spent the last hour looking for him, but when I finally found him, the shock nearly made me pull the trigger. Arms drawn up, frozen in place. It scared the life out of me. When detectives came, we pieced it together. The man and an accomplice had been stripping copper from a factory, something that was just starting to become common back then. They'd worked their way through the building, ripping out every bit of metal they could, until they reached the one room still connected to power. The glowing panel controlled the fire suppression system, which had to stay active for insurance. They must have thought they'd struck gold. The cabinets were filled with thick copper cables worth serious money. They managed to cut one, leaving the sharp ends exposed. But when the man tried to cut the second, the current surged through him. The shock pulled him forward, driving him into the exposed ends of the first cable. It was over in an instant. That was the body we'd been called to find. It's been years, but I still remember walking through that pitch-black maze of building, not knowing what we were going to find, and then coming face-to-face with the reality of it. Story 20. I used to be a paramedic, and one of the people we often got called to help was a former gang member with epilepsy. He wasn't a bad guy when he was stable, but after a seizure, he'd come out swinging, especially at anyone in uniform. And, well, paramedics wear uniforms. One night, we got dispatched to his address again. My partner and I were the first to arrive. I had the medication ready, drawn up, just in case. As soon as I stepped through the door, his mother, an incredibly sweet lady, yelled, "He's waking up!" I knew what that meant. I launched myself onto him and held on with everything I had. It felt like I was riding a bull or rodeo, just trying not to get thrown off while my partner got the injection into him. The problem was, it was an intramuscular shot. It takes longer to work than in four. So for the next 5 to 7 minutes, I was just hanging on for dear life. By the time the fire crew showed up, I was exhausted. They piled in, five guys holding him down, and I finally rolled off to the side, completely spent. A few hours later, I was back at the hospital and saw him again. As usual, he was calm, apologetic, and even said, "Man, I've never fought anyone as tough as you." Honestly, the only things that saved me that night were being a good 40 pounds heavier than him and having a pocket full of the right medicine. Story 21. We happened to be right near the scene. when a call came out about an armed carjacking. Almost immediately, I spotted the stolen car fishtailing in the snow just half a block away. We lit it up and started chasing. The driver didn't make it far. He ditched the car in the driveway of an apartment building and took off running. I chased him uphill while my partner looped around the building to cut him off. As I crested the hill, I suddenly heard a shot. He'd fired blindly behind him, just a random, to whom it may concern, shot while running. We kept after him, straight through a church parking lot where, of all things, bingo night was just letting out. Way too many bystanders around to fire back, so we just pushed harder. Finally, we caught him in a backyard behind the church. The department later gave us plaques for the arrest and cake, because apparently that's how we celebrate near-death chases. Story 22. When I first started as a corrections officer, I was assigned to shadow another officer until a formal trainer was available. It didn't take long for me to realize that the guy I was shadowing was not well-liked by the inmates. The moment that sticks with me was when we walked into a dorm with about 50 men to do a roster and bed check. Normally, there's at least some chatter in a dorm, but this time, absolute silence. I could feel the hair on the back of my neck stand up. Every single inmate had their eyes locked, not on me, but on the officer I was shadowing. He didn't even seem to notice, but I was frozen in fight-or-flight mode. The tension in that room was unreal. Two officers against 50 inmates is not good odds, and I was certain something bad was about to happen. Thankfully, nothing went down. But I'll tell you this, I was never happier than the day I no longer had to shadow that guy. Story 23. I was running a road crew cleanup one day with 8 state inmates. Everything was going fine until one of them bent down, picked something up, and I realized it was a loaded .38 revolver. He started walking back toward the van with it in his hand, and my heart dropped. My first thought was, oh no, this is it. I quickly made a call on my cell phone, put it on speaker, and told him firmly to set the gun down and back away. To my surprise, he looked at me and said, "Boss, I ain't gonna shoot you. You've always been good to us." Then he calmly handed me the gun. We all loaded back into the van and returned to the prison without any problems. I'll never forget that moment. I'm retired now from the Florida Department of Corrections, but that day could have ended in a very different way. Story 24. I used to be a police officer in New South Wales, Australia. One of the hardest duties we ever had was delivering what's called a death message, notifying next of kin about a fatal accident. One case I'll never forget started as a motorcycle crash where the rider was killed. We went to his girlfriend's home to deliver the message. At first, no one answered. That wasn't unusual, but something felt off, so we forced entry to make sure everything was okay. Inside the house, things were strange. The kitchen looked disturbed, like items had been taken out of place. As we searched further, we made a discovery that left us frozen in shock. Without going into details, it was clear she had been the victim of a terrible crime. In that instant, the case flipped completely. What began as a routine duty, one of the saddest parts of the job, suddenly became a major investigation. It was one of those unforgettable moments where your stomach drops and you realize the situation is far darker than you expected. Story 25. I was working as a school resource officer at a middle school when I got called into a meeting with the vice principal, a 13-year-old student, and his mom and grandma. The mom explained that someone had attacked her son and carved letters into his hand. When I looked, it was definitely nasty. The boy gave me a story, but right away, things didn't add up. He even gave me the name of a supposed suspect, but when I pulled that student from class, the description didn't match at all. One thing that stood out, this was Texas, and it was hot, yet the boy was wearing a jacket the whole time. I asked him to take it off. When he did, my stomach dropped. His entire arm was covered in carvings, including the name of a girl. I asked if she was his girlfriend. He said no. I spoke to the girl later, and she said she had never even talked to him. It turned out the boy had been off his prescribed medication and had a history of mental health struggles. Seeing the extent of what he'd done to himself was deeply unsettling. It's one of those moments that stays with you. Story 26. I'm not a cop, but I worked as an animal control officer. One of the worst calls I ever responded to was for a family dog that had supposedly been attacked by a wild animal earlier that night. When I arrived, it was immediately clear the story didn't add up. The dog was in terrible shape, suffering from severe injuries and infection that had clearly been going on for much longer than just a few hours. We rushed the dog to the ER, but the vets determined there was no way to save it. It had to be humanely put to rest. The family still insisted it was a wild animal attack that had just happened that night. But the truth was obvious. Whatever it causes, it had been going on for weeks. That was the day I truly felt my faith in humanity take a hit. Story 27. This isn't my story exactly. It's my mom's. She was a police officer, and at the time, she was pregnant with me. It was her last day before starting maternity leave when a call came in about a man locked inside his house, threatening to take his own life. She and a few other officers entered the home. And even though she was pregnant, my mom took point. They moved toward the bathroom where the man was holed up. The moment she opened the door, she saw him sitting in the bathtub with a revolver aimed directly at the doorway. She instantly yelled, "Gun!" and shoved the officer next to her back out of the room, putting herself in danger instead. Eventually, the man was secured and the revolver was taken from him. When they checked it, they found something chilling. All the primers had been struck. The man had tried to fire, but because the ammunition was so old, nothing went off. That close call shook her. She started maternity leave right after and told me later that she almost didn't return to the job, but she did, and today she's a police chief. Story 28. In my town, whenever there's an unattended death, law enforcement is usually called in first to make sure there's nothing suspicious before EMS, the coroner, or the funeral home take over. One summer day, after a solid week of temperatures in the 90s, we got a call. When we walked to the front door, the smell hit immediately. We knew right away this person had been there for some time. The air conditioning wasn't working, and the heat inside the house was overwhelming. The man was upstairs. According to his records, he was already a large guy. But conditions in that house had made things far worse. By the time EMS arrived and tried to move him, it was rough. Things started going badly, and the smell grew even stronger. That was the point when my sergeant decided we'd wait outside until the body was fully loaded. To this day, I can't shake the memory of that scene. Some calls stick with you forever, and that one definitely did. Story 29. I worked as a parking enforcement officer, and for about 2 months, I was assigned to clean up an area known for terrible parking. It wasn't just about tickets. This place had huge pedestrian safety problems and even a lot of car-related crime tied to the chaos. After steady work in that four-block area, things completely turned around. Parking was under control, traffic flowed properly, and reported crimes dropped by 90%. But the moment I was reassigned to another hotspot, the progress unraveled. Within just 2 weeks, the neighborhood had slipped right back into its old habits. It really showed me something. People don't take parking laws seriously, even when following them makes their own community safer and cleaner. Story 30. I've had my fair share of oh no moments on the job. My coworkers even joke that I'm a magnet for trouble. One of the strangest happened while I was working overtime on Super Bowl night. Earlier in the shift, I noticed a car just sitting in a self-serve car wash stall. An hour later, I drove past again and saw the same car in the exact same spot, still untouched. Nobody looked like they were getting ready to wash it either. Now, this was an area known for drug activity, so I decided to pull in and check it out. I walked up quietly and spotted a man in the back seat. As soon as he saw me, he quickly reached down near the seat. My heart jumped. I thought he might be reaching for a weapon. I drew my gun and ordered him to show me his hands. After a tense few seconds, he raised his hands, empty. I told him to step out of the car, but he said, "I need to pull up my pants first." That's when it hit me. He hadn't been reaching for a weapon at all. Let's just say he was in the middle of something very different. When he finally stepped out, I noticed a stash of drugs sitting right there on the seat next to him. I asked if there was anything else in the car, and he admitted there was more contraband along with some personal items. Then he started begging me not to worry about the drugs, but to throw away the embarrassing items before his wife came to pick up the car. Apparently, he had left her at home with their Super Bowl guests, claiming he was just going to wash the car. Instead, he created his own halftime show at the car wash. Story 31. My grandfather retired from the police force a few years ago, but one of his stories has always stuck with me. He once responded to a call for backup. Someone had climbed up into a tower and was firing a rifle. When my grandpa arrived on scene, the man immediately shot at his squad car. The bullet tore right through the roof, passed directly over his shoulder, and even went straight through the shoulder strap of his uniform, just an inch lower, and things could have ended very differently. That close call is one of the stories he's never forgotten, and neither have I. Story 32. My partner and I were out on patrol in a known drug area, looking for an easy arrest to help meet our quota. As soon as we got there, we saw a plainclothes officer already making an arrest. We walked over to check if everything was good, and they asked us if we were looking for anything. We said, sure, an easy possession arrest, and we wouldn't have to search. Everything seemed fine until the suspect was handcuffed in the back of the van and radioed in as one under. That's when we noticed the plainclothes officers were laughing and waving at us, driving away. Something didn't feel right, and then the smell hit. I can't even begin to describe it, but it was something you'd never forget. Turns out, the guy was a homeless crackhead who had been in some pretty bad shape. We had to hose him down, spray him with cologne, and get him a fresh set of clothes. What a night that was. Story 33. I used to work with a guy who was a police officer, but eventually hit burnout after seeing too many disturbing things. He told me one story that's always stuck with me. He got called out to a report of a dead body in the underground. Apparently, a teenage girl had overdosed on a train. The crazy part? She was propped up in her seat, so no one noticed she was dead. She had been riding the train's route for hours, and because of how impersonal we become as a society, nobody even looked at her closely enough to see she was obviously lifeless. He later saw the security camera footage from the train, and it felt like something straight out of a horror movie. He described it as watching people get on and off the train and fast forward, winking in and out of the shot, while she just sat there, completely still. The clock ticked through hours of footage, and in all that time, nobody realized they were sharing the carriage with corpse. Story 34. My dad was a cop for about 19 years, but it wasn't until after one particularly tough shift that he called me, the first time he ever reached out like that. He said he felt like I was the only one in the family who would just listen to him. He got a call about a possible domestic violence situation in the next county, and he was the closest officer. Here's the short version. A man had locked himself in the bathroom with his two young sons. One was 7, the other 3. He shot and killed both of them before turning the gun on himself. My dad got out of his car right after the second shot. He barely made it into the house by the third shot. After that, he requested a transfer the very next week. It haunted him for a long time. Story 35. I'm not sure if I'd call it an oh no moment, but it's definitely one that stands out. It was late, about 4:30 or 5 a.m., and we were getting off at 6:30, so nobody was really eager to take this call. We were sent to a burglary in progress, and all we knew was that someone was breaking windows from the backyard. I pull up, and two people rush out of the house, saying someone had entered. We set up around the house, and my corporal peeks through a fence to see what's going on. That's when he spots a man face up on the ground, blood everywhere. We make entry, and it's clear he's dead. We never figured out who he was, but our best guess was that he'd been high on meth, thought it was his house, and tried to break into the window when he couldn't get the door open. He had a deep gash on his arm from the broken glass. From the amount of blood, it was clear he didn't die quickly, and the backyard was soaked. Luckily, there had already been an actual homicide that night, so the homicide detectives were nearby and able to take over. A more recent incident was when 4 gangsters tried to rob the wrong guy. He shot all 4 of them, 3 headshots. One of the dead guys was lying right there on the sidewalk, and it was raining. The blood was running down the street, just like a scene from the movies. I work in a city where things get aggressive, and every day brings something new. Story 36. I'm not a police officer, but I've had my share of oh no moments working in EMS. One night, we were called to a house for a welfare check. Police were dispatched too, but we got there first. The front door was unlocked, and the house was pitch dark. We couldn't find a light switch, but then we saw a man standing in a doorway with his head tilted to the side. We were a little startled, but tried to be polite. "Excuse us, sir. We're here for a welfare check." But he didn't respond. He just stood there, staring at us, completely silent. It felt like he was trying to mess with us. I was scrambling to find a light switch while my partner bolted out of there. I kept trying to get the guy to say something, backing out of the house. When I finally found the light switch, the light flicked on, and then I saw the man hanging from a wire in the doorway to the kitchen. For those 20 to 30 seconds, I honestly thought he was just messing with us, trying to scare us. I didn't sleep well for a few nights after that call. Story 37. I'm not a cop, but I work as a corrections officer in a minimum security prison. One night, I had just gotten back from dinner service when I got a call to head to Building X. I was floating that day. When I walked in, I saw an inmate who had been absolutely beaten to hell. He had 3 fist-sized lumps on his head. Both eyes were black and swollen. His lips were busted, and there were actual boot prints on his back and chest. They literally beat the crap out of him. I'm not kidding when I say he shit himself. It was laying right there in the yard. What happened was, he had been jumped out of a gang because he refused to stab someone. When we brought him to medical, two sergeants, a lieutenant, and the head nurse all gasped when they saw him. He was sent to the hospital and was diagnosed with a broken rib. That was the first time I really realized just how dangerous some of the inmates can be. Story 38. This isn't my story, but it's my brother-in-law's. He's a first responder, and one night, he got called an accident at a dark intersection known for bad accidents because people tend to speed through there. When he arrived, he was the first one on the scene, and it was a really bad collision. He found a 6-month-old infant who had been thrown more than 20 feet from the car. The mother was already dead. He immediately started CPR on the baby, but the injuries were just too severe. Tragically, the baby passed away in his arms. To this day, he insists on using car seats and boosters for kids until they're big enough. I don't think he's ever truly gotten over that baby dying. Story 39. I wasn't a cop in this situation, but I was the victim. I used to be a truck driver, and one day I was involved in a tragic incident, a suicide by truck where a man killed himself and his son. I was physically unharmed, but after a couple of hours, I was sitting in the back of a police cruiser giving my statement. That's when the MTO, or DOT for my American neighbors, pulled up. They started taking pictures of my 18-wheeler and preparing to do a truck inspection. At that moment, the officer I was working with got out of his cruiser and absolutely ripped into the inspector. He told him, "Get the hell out of my crime scene." I was surprised, but I thanked the cop, and he just shrugged and said he wasn't sure if he was allowed to do that, but he wasn't going to let DOT charge me with anything. Story 40. I was the first on the scene of a suicide call. The adult child of an elderly person called in, saying their parent had just killed themselves. I rushed over, expecting the worst, but nothing could prepare me for what I saw. The mother was dead, her head almost completely severed. It didn't seem possible for someone to do that to themselves. I was alone in a house with 3 or 4 other people, and a brutal scene right in front of me. My first thought was that this was a murder. My backup was still a few minutes away, and I was in a part of the suburbs where it took time for officers to get to me. My heart was racing because I felt like I was in a small mansion with a possible murderer on the loose. There were so many rooms and doors around me. I felt like a sitting duck. I had no idea if someone was hiding or coming for me. Those few minutes felt like hours. When my backup arrived and the detective started investigating, they concluded it was just an incredibly violent and determined suicide, an insanely sharp knife, and a woman determined to end it all. Story 41. I'm a correctional officer, and I had a pretty intense moment a couple of weeks ago. I was doing paperwork in the block office when I got a call from the officer in the control center. He said something was wrong and that I needed to head to one of the cells immediately. I asked what was going on, but he didn't have all the details, just that I should check it out. Usually when a call like this comes in, it's nothing serious, a guy with a toothache or something minor, and I end up escorting them to the infirmary. But the officer sounded worried, so I figured I should go check it out. When I got to the cell, the first thing I noticed was the blood. The floor was completely covered. So much blood, I couldn't even see the floor. It looked like something out of one of those gory B horror movies. I saw one of the offenders slumped over, not responding, and the other one was sitting against the wall, panting, both of them covered in blood. At that point, I thought I was looking at homicide, maybe an altercation gone wrong with Shank or something. I immediately turned on my body cam and radio for first responders and nurses from the infirmary. Long story short, what actually happened was way worse than I imagined. The two of them had made a suicide pact. They both cut arteries in a way I don't want to get into and swallowed a bunch of razor blades. There was a suicide note on the table, and the sink was full of blades. We got to them just in time. They were close to bleeding out. I ended up getting blood all over me, and the guy whose blood it was casually mentioned that he had hepatitis C. It was one of those days where I had multiple, oh no, moments, and it really hit me how quickly things can escalate in this line of work. Story 42. I responded to a welfare check one day that was called in by a social services hotline. A man had called in saying he was suicidal. They provided a name and the number he used to call. Our dispatch managed to find a previous call from that number linked to an address. My partner and I headed to that address, and when we knocked, the father answered the door. We explained why we were there and asked to speak to his son. The father knocked on his son's locked door while we spoke in the hallway. I asked if he was getting dressed and knocked again. That's when we heard the unmistakable sound of a handgun slide racking. Without thinking, we drew our weapons and told the father to step outside immediately. As I tried to get the mother outside, she attempted to walk down the hallway toward her son's door, and I had to physically force her out. My partner and I took cover inside, repeatedly calling for the son to put the gun down. We told him we were there just to check on him, to talk. About 30 to 45 seconds into the ordeal, a single gunshot rang out from inside the room. It was clear to us he had likely shot himself. A minute or two later, two more officers arrived, and we forced entry into the room. We found the man immediately lying inside the doorway, a single gunshot wound to the head. It was obvious he was beyond help. Telling the parents their son was dead was one of the most surreal moments of my career. The father's reaction was unsettling. He didn't seem to be fazed at all. As we searched the room, we found more spent shell casings and holes in the wall from where he had shot at the walls. There were steak knives stabbed into the drywall. It was clear this young man was struggling deeply and needed help. I still can't understand why the family didn't seek out the proper help for him. Story 43. One time, I was cleaning out a drug take-back box by my office. It's a metal box where people drop off their old prescriptions so we can dispose of them properly. Normally, it's filled with mundane stuff, like vitamins or sunscreen, but occasionally, you'll find some opioids. This particular evening, as I was reaching into the box, I felt a sharp prick on my finger and realized I'd just grabbed an uncapped syringe. My heart sank, and I quickly ran to the bathroom, squeezing the blood out of the pinprick as best I could. Shaky and panicked, I called dispatch, asking them to send a paramedic to my office. The medic arrived, and after consulting with the on-call doctor, she reassured me that the chances of contracting anything were very slim. I took another look at the syringe, and to my relief, it wasn't an illicit drug. It was someone's testosterone supplement. The syringe had a name and the VA hospital's logo on it. I called down to the hospital, and thankfully, the patient had no communicable diseases. It was a huge relief, but I can't deny it sure freaked me out. Story 44. When I was a trainee, we were waiting for a suspected car thief. At least, that's what we were told based on the info we got from local police. When the suspect finally shows up and we stop him, the plan was for officers to approach from behind. But here I come, thinking I'm being tactical, taking up a position on the passenger side with a shotgun, covering that angle. Now, instead of doing a standard felony stop, where we take a defensive position and order the suspect to come to us with his hands up, the officers just walked up to the stolen vehicle from the driver's side and ordered him out at gunpoint. That's when it hit me. I'm downrange of all those pistols and rifles, essentially looking right down their barrels. I couldn't tell if I was being dumb for standing on the passenger side, or if they were dumb for not doing a proper felony extraction. Luckily, the suspect complied and came out quietly. But that moment stayed with me. Story 45. My stepbrother shared this story at a family dinner the other night, and it's too good not to share. He got a call to an empty parking lot in the middle of the day. There was a man high on something, screaming and yelling into the wind while holding a chainsaw. My stepbrother pulled out his taser, ready to use it, and fired the probes. In slow motion, he watched as one of the probes flew straight for the chainsaw's gas tank. Oh no, he thought. Luckily, the probe bounced off the chainsaw and didn't make contact. It was one of those oh shit moments where things could have gone really wrong. But he got lucky. Story 46. This isn't my story, but it's from a former professor of mine who taught a social deviance class. She once got called in for a welfare check because nobody had seen a neighbor in the apartment next door for about a week, even though his lights and TV were still on. This was strange because he had been a pretty personable guy, according to the neighbors. When she entered the apartment, she discovered the man had tragically hung himself, except he was doing so while masturbating in a scuba suit, complete with a snorkel and harpoon gun. The suit had a cutout for his junk, and it was so bloated it looked 2 to 3 times its normal size. The really bizarre part? Someone accidentally bumped into him, and the suit let out a loud fart. According to her, it was just her and the door at that moment. No co-workers, no EMTs, just a surreal, strange scene that left her with an image she'd never forget. Story 47. I was doing AK-9 track in a rough part of county. The K-9 officer and my partner were clearing a backyard, thinking the guy who fled from a car accident was hiding there. They told me to go next door and cover that backyard, just in case he tried to run again. As I was checking it out, I saw some movement inside an old SUV parked in the yard. I went over to investigate, and it turned out to be our suspect. He was hiding inside the SUV. When I confronted him, he said he was just waiting for an Uber. It was my first K9 track, and I just happened to walk right up on the guy. Talk about getting lucky. Story 48. I had a creepy moment once while working a DUI stop. One night, I pulled over a guy, gave him a DUI, towed his car, and seized his license. I served him with a DMV form, letting him know that his license had been seized and that he'd need to show up to a hearing to find out if it would be suspended. Like any good officer, I filled out the required boxes on the form, keeping a copy for my report. A few days later, a buddy of mine came up to me. He had been dispatched to a call about a suicide in the park. A man had been found hanging from a tree. When they identified him, they found a DMV form I had served him in his pocket. That realization gave me chills. Story 49. When I was younger and a bit reckless, I liked to do one-man surveillances. The city I worked in had a huge drug problem, and the usual spots for dealing were well known. One night, I parked my police car around the corner, walked to the sidewalk, and hid halfway behind a bush, watching people walk into a drug house on the next block. I saw a guy walk up to the house, go inside for a moment, and then come back out, heading straight toward me. Perfect, I thought. I'd stop him, check if he just bought drugs, and take it from there. I stepped back into the shadow of a doorway to wait for him to pass. What I didn't know was that he saw me. At least, he saw the shadow of someone backing into the doorway. He didn't stop, though, and as he walked up, I stepped out and said my usual line, "What's up, man?" Thankfully, I was in full uniform with my flashlight in hand, but I saw his face go from calm to pure shock. Then I heard something hit the ground. I quickly grabbed him and cuffed him, and that's when he explained that he didn't realize I was an officer. I looked down and saw what he dropped. It was a knife. He thought I was going to rob him. We just stood there, staring at each other for a moment. Both of us were probably thinking the same thing. How badly this could have gone. I told him to turn around, took the handcuffs off, and told him to pick up his knife and leave. We both walked away from that one lucky, knowing how close it came to something much worse. Story 50. I'm not a cop myself, thankfully, it's a tough job, but I did take a criminal justice class where the teacher shared some intense stories. One of my favorites was about a really bad accident he responded to. He arrived on the scene after a few other emergency vehicles had already gotten there, hoping he could help with any further aid. He quickly noticed one passenger sitting off to the side by themselves. The other passengers with visible injuries were already being attended to, so he decided to check on this person. He walked over, trying to look for signs of a concussion or possible internal injury. After about 5 or 10 seconds of talking to the person, he looked down, and that's when he saw it. The person's head had a large wound, and part of their skull was missing. Even as he told this story, you could tell how it still affected him. Oh no, he thought, realizing the person needed urgent medical attention. Pro tip, never rush to the scene. It's easy to miss something important when you're in a hurry. Story 51. I've got a few oh no moments from my 5 years of working in a medium-sized city. Here are some of the most memorable ones. The first was during my field training. We got called to a possible overdose. I went into the basement of the house while my trainer grabbed the medical gear. Right as I got down there, this guy, high on bath salts, started to wake up. He immediately tried to tackle me and grab my gun. It was a struggle, but I was able to keep my weapon safe until my trainer showed up and we got him cuffed. The second moment was when I heard a medical-only call for a 6-month-old not breathing. I was only 2 blocks away, so I rushed there and started CPR until EMS arrived. Unfortunately, the child didn't make it. To this day, I think about that one a lot. I really hate running medical calls, but we often get there faster than EMS or fire departments can. The third one was during a traffic stop on the interstate. I made contact with the driver, and it was obvious he was drunk. I had him step out and told him to face away from me so I could pat him down. As I was about to start, I asked him if he had anything on him. That's when he jerked away and reached for his waistband. I saw the outline of a gun, and everything felt like it moved in slow motion. I was able to grab him, push him against the car, and take the gun from him. He ended up with a .200 BAC and Xanax in his system. If he had been sober, I think he would have reacted quicker, and it could have turned out much differently. Story 52. This story comes from one of my buddies who was a rookie working in NYC. For the first couple of years, he got stuck with the rough shifts, night shift in a bad part of town. One night, he was chasing a suspect but lost him after a while. As he was leaving the area, he realized he had lost his radio, so he had to retrace his steps to find it. Eventually, he ended up on a rooftop all alone where he found his radio. But when he was heading back down, someone jumped him. He fought them off, chased him for a bit, and then realized he'd been stabbed through his vest. He ended up in the hospital for a few days. When I visited him, he told me something that stuck with me. As he feared for his life that night, he realized, it's just a job. Don't risk your life over it. After that, he wouldn't take unnecessary risk. He said if anything didn't feel right, he'd always call for backup. They never found the guy because he couldn't identify him, and he wasn't even sure it was the same person he'd been chasing earlier. Story 53. My grandfather told me this story when I asked him about his days as a cop. He worked for the Ontario Provincial Police, OPP, in a small rural town, and there had been a series of armed robberies. Two brothers would rob places and always drive off in the same car. One night, on his way home, my grandfather noticed fresh tire tracks leading into a farm field. He had a gut feeling, so he turned off the road and followed the tracks. About 150 meters into the field, he spotted the car. He put his lights on, spotlighted the car, and got out with his sidearm drawn. But the car was empty. As he started searching around, he heard movement in the field just out of sight. He quickly moved back to his car for cover and shouted that there were other cops nearby, and they were surrounded. After a little while, the two brothers came out and surrendered. It worked out, but the real shock came when he talked to them back at the station. One of the brothers said that they had planned to kill a cop if they were ever found. Apparently, when my grandfather was checking out the car and walking back to his own vehicle, the brother had him in his sights with a powerful revolver, but when it came time to pull the trigger, he just couldn't do it. If the brother had fired, my grandfather wouldn't have stood a chance. Story 54. I used to be a paramedic, and I responded to a bad crash on the highway where the driver needed to be extricated. I jumped in the back seat and held the driver's C-spine while the fire department started cutting the door off and working on the vehicle. The driver, who was a woman, started asking about where Molly and Fred were and if they were okay. I was confused because she was the only person in the car. I asked her if she was talking about the people in the other car, and she said, "No, they're my pet tarantula and snake." I looked down at the floorboard and saw the remains of two terrariums, but no Molly or Fred. Story 55. I was watching over a guy at the hospital one night when things started getting weird. It looked like he was, well, doing something inappropriate. Then, to my surprise, he starts, well, pleasuring himself. My partner and I rushed in with a couple nurses, telling him to show us his hands. He pulled one hand out, which was fine. But when we asked him to slowly bring out the other hand, it was completely covered in, well, you can guess. The nurses got him cleaned up, but about half an hour later, he started again. This time, we managed to stop him before it got too far. I asked if he needed to use the bathroom, and he nodded. I called for a nurse, and they started walking him toward the bathroom. But on the way there, he kept his finger where it shouldn't be, and soon we were dealing with little Hershey kisses of poop dropping along the way. It was clear he needed more help, so they decided he had to go to a mental health facility. Oh! And before all this, he had told us he got rid of a gun, which led to a wild goose chase for our team. Luckily, they did find it. Story 56. My brother-in-law was a police officer in a beach town with a large military presence. On one of his first days on the job, he responded to what seemed like a routine car accident. But when he arrived, he found a car on fire and a person trapped inside. As he pulled the man out, he realized that the person's leg had been completely severed. Once he managed to get the guy far enough away from the burning car, he quickly had to apply a tourniquet to stop the bleeding. A higher-ranking officer responded shortly after my brother-in-law gave a description of the situation, and that officer ended up getting some kind of award for his heroic actions. Story 57. It was my first night working, and I responded to an accident. There was an intoxicated man standing by the car, and he kept telling me his foot hurt when he walked. But every time he took a step, I could see the bones of his foot moving around. Then he told us that another person had been with him. We looked over and saw a man sitting across a fence in a field. When I walked up to him, he was holding his head in his hands. I shined my flashlight, and I could see his skull. His forehead was hanging down in front of his eyes, and a large piece of his scalp had been torn off when he was ejected from the car. As I got closer, I thought I saw something move on his skull. When I looked more closely, I realized it was red ants. He was sitting in a pile of them, and they were crawling all over him. Second edit, there was actually a third victim, a female, who was ejected as well. She was lying beside the car, and when I saw her, I noticed something was wrong with her hips. She was lying on her side, but her hips were completely gone. Her stomach was swollen, and she was having trouble breathing. Turns out, she had crushed her pelvis, and the broken bones had punctured her abdomen, causing massive internal bleeding. She barely survived and was life-flighted to another hospital.